Hi, this is Ken McCarthy with Jazz on the Tube, and you're listening to our podcast series. And one of the things we love to do is feature the work of people who are presenting jazz in unique ways. Sometimes I think there's as much creativity in getting jazz on the stage as there is that takes that actually takes place on the stage. And this is a new model to me, something I've really never heard of before. I really like it a lot. The music speaks for itself, and we've got a YouTube clip beneath the interview that you should definitely check out. But in this interview, we're going to talk about getting the music together, getting the musicians together, and taking care of the musicians. And this is, unfortunately, one of the most overlooked parts of the jazz world. And every chance I get to do an interview like this where we can talk about a venture where the musicians are the most important thing, not an afterthought, I love to do the call. So today we're talking with Ron Wasserman, and he is leading the New York Jazz Harmonic. Now, you've got a really interesting, first of all, welcome, Ron.
Thank you.
And Ron, you've got an interesting background. Let's talk about how you came to this, what you were doing before, how you got the idea, and then let's get into how this organization runs and what's unique about it.
Sure. Well, yes, Ken, you honed into what was unique about us right in your introduction, you know, the musician coming first. And I say that speaking as a presenter. But yes, I graduated from a music college in the early 80s, and I had, back in the day, there weren't as many jazz conservatories as there are now, so I had studied classical music in conservatory, and I had to decide what I wanted to do because jazz had always been a part of my life since I was a little kid. But I did decide to go into classical music. I've been very lucky. Over the last 25 years, I've been a member of the New York City Ballet Orchestra, which is a fairly steady gig. We work, you know, close to 20 weeks a year. And for a musician, that's a very rare bird. And I always wanted to come back to jazz in some way, and now I've decided that after experimenting with a bunch of stuff, that I would bring what I have learned about the nonprofit classical arts world into sort of trying to organize a functioning jazz orchestra that, well, call me crazy, a 17-piece jazz orchestra that actually strives to pay its musicians a fair wage rather than the 17 musicians splitting the door, which has been the case in big bands for forever.
Absolutely.
Since the days of Count Basie, you know, when he was alive, you know.
Absolutely. So, you know, I had a brief time at the New York State Council on the Arts in the music department. When I was an intern before being an intern was popular.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at the numbers and, you know, God bless classical music. It's a great thing. But wow, between the opera and the symphony and the chamber orchestras and quartets and the ballets and everything, there was not a whole lot of money left over for everybody else.
Yeah.
And I was also simultaneous with being at the New York State Council on the arts, I was also in the jazz world. I was helping run a little record label, Indian Navigation, you know, on just a sort of a managerial level. And I realized, wow, jazz and, you know, classical music is very organized financially.
Yeah.
Jazz.
Well, there's an irony in that, of course. There's an irony in that in this country, justly so, we are really, really good at organizing large organizations, cultural institutions that support European art forms. And we're very good at it, and they're very well endowed. But for our American art form, our great cultural gift to the world, we are lost as far financially speaking. It's all everybody for itself, for themselves, and whatever we can get paid, whatever we can split the door, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It goes on and on.
Yep.
And in fact, in some ways, the great big cultural institutions, I'm talking like the Metropolitan Opera or the Boston Symphony or something, they're better at it than in Europe sometimes, keeping these organizations going. You know, in some cases, they're better orchestras, but it's all European, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I've made my living in it over the years. So I'm not dissing it. I'm just saying, how can we do this for jazz, our great cultural gift to the world?
Well, there's another irony is very often European venues seem to do a better job of presenting jazz, showcasing it in a really good, elevated way.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Of course, there's a couple of exceptions. I mean, Jazz at Lincoln Center has really done a great job at institutionalizing it, and a couple other places. I think they just built a concert hall out in San Francisco. I think it's called San Francisco Jazz, but those are the exceptions.
Exactly. So in addition to being a working musician, did you also have experience on the fundraising and management side?
I did very peripherally as a member of the, as an artist member of the organization. Everything we can do to support the fundraising, we do. If they need us to play a free concert for so-and-so, or if we need to organize some kind of little fundraiser, whatever we can do, we always do. In support of the big picture. So, but I've never had the experience of being the person who's going to raise the money.
What I
did learn from the very successful people at it, and I knew this going into this before I started this, in this nonprofit model, is that you have to live, sleep, and dream fundraising.
Yep. That's a really good point. And if you think about how jazz came to be, it was always commercial. The idea,
right.
I mean, first of all, decades ago, obviously, there was no dream of supporting the art. Now I think there's more of a possibility, but the skill set and the experience and the mindset, it's just not there yet. And so I consider you one of the pioneers. And if I were to summarize what you're doing, you're taking the model that the classical music industry uses to fundraise and to make sure...
Yeah, it's a nonprofit model. So that we can accept tax-deductible donations and apply for grants from, various foundations, et cetera. Yes, continue.
Yep, and that's part A. And then part B is you're making... your goal is to make sure the musicians are being paid and paid well. Let's talk about how you handle payment. Let's talk about... We've referred several times to the splitting the door, but there's other issues. There's rehearsal time.
Yes.
There's what you get paid to perform. How is that handled in the classical world versus how is it handled in the jazz world? And what are you doing to bridge that gap?
Well, as you say, we're just getting started now. So the bulk and let's put it something in comparison. Let's take the biggest performing arts organization in this country, which is the Metropolitan Opera. Their budget is about $300 million a year. My budget is about $20,000 for this year for our four concerts. Yes, cough, cough.
I'm joking.
Yes. So I'm personally guaranteeing whatever money for this first year that I can't raise. And how we're doing that is we did a little Indiegogo. We've asked friends and family, et cetera, et cetera. So we've raised, a good part of our budget. We've been fairly successful so far. But what we're going to do as far as payment is we're going to say, this is what we're going to pay. And I don't want to get into specific numbers, but it's basically triple what a door splitting gig would be for a concert. Plus, we're going to pay a fee for the rehearsals, and we're going to have more rehearsals than the normal gig would be. And the organization will pay for the rehearsal space, and we've budgeted things, and we're going to move forward and hope that there's plenty of things that catch on in this world. Some things don't. If it doesn't catch on, we will have had a lot of fun. And if it catches on, perhaps we will get some interest going for future seasons.
Great. So you did throw out one number, which is, did you say $20,000 for four performances?
That's going to be pretty much my budget my payroll budget for the four performances, about five. I don't want to get into specifics about how much I'm paying everybody. But my budget, my total budget of all my expenditures, and I would say at least 80 to 90% of that is going directly in this first year to the musicians you know, it's going to be somewhere between $20,000 and $25,000.
Got it. And again, this is a big group. This isn't a quartet.
This is a 17-piece big band. It's a 17-piece big band. And, you know, why big band? Well, you know, it's the jazz big band is one of America's greatest, the greatest cultural things that America's ever created. And if you're going to do something like this, why not dream? I'm not dreaming giant. I'm dreaming medium, let's say. But, you know, maybe I'm a little crazy, but, you know, we're going to give it a go. We have the budget for the four concerts.
That's great. That's great. Well, people love big band music. They love to hear it on recording.
Yeah.
And maybe what they're not aware of is that's a lot of mouths to feed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just a practical matter. And, you know, typically, we, you know, as a fan, we don't really think about that. But it's just a reality. So
yeah.
What I would say to big band lovers is support big bands. If you love the music and you want it to continue, the best way is to find a group that's doing something like this, like the New York Jazz Harmonic, and make it available, you know, to help it make it available to other people who love it. So let's talk about the gigs that you have. Where are they?
Sure.
Oh, sorry.
Well, we have four concerts scheduled. They're all going to be at the Leonard Nimoy Theater, Thalia Theater at the Symphony Space in Manhattan, which is on 95th Street and Broadway. It's a wonderful venue. They have two theaters there. We are going to be in the smaller theater. We have about 150 seats to fill for each concert. And they're all going to be on Sunday evenings. And the reason for that is that I have a feeling that a lot of my audience is going to be other musicians. And Sunday evening is generally the slowest night for freelance musicians. So that's where and when. And do you want me to get into what we're going to be playing?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So we're commissioning all kinds of new music from a wide variety of composers, some of them in classical fields, some of them in the jazz field, some of them in the tango and wave, in the world music field, tango nuevo. And on each concert, we're going to be premiering brand new music, never heard before. And the one thing they're going to have in common is the orchestration of the big band with the saxes, trumpets, trombones, and rhythm section. But it's also going to swing. Everything has to swing. And I told even the classical composers that I've commissioned that they have to write something that swings.
Good. Wow, that's so. Not only are you keeping the big band live for live performances, and not only are you paying the musicians a fair wage for their efforts and for their rehearsal time, but you're also providing opportunities for composers and arrangers to get their music in front of audiences.
Yeah. I didn't want this to be just about me. I mean, I don't mean this as a diss in any way, but most big bands are basically one person's music, and some of that music is phenomenal, and I love it. I love to listen to it. I love to go out and hear it. But I wanted this to be a little bigger than me, because I thought that it would have a greater chance of taking off on an institutional basis. So one of the concerts, I am going to premiere a suite that I wrote. It's going to be an evening length, sort of a Duke Ellington, one of his sort of on that scale of an evening-length suite of music by one composer. And that's what we're doing on November 1st, Sunday, November 1st at 7 at Symphony Space. We're premiering my suite, which is called The Four Seasons of New York Jazz, which is very complicated, musicologically speaking, but it basically covers all styles. It's like the history of jazz in New York from
nice.
Beginning
and that,
in a two-hour. Yeah.
Great, and that's Sunday, November 1st.
That's Sunday, November 1st in Manhattan. And then one other thing I forgot to mention. For each of the concerts, I've engaged a guest artist of some renown. I have, you know, obviously over 27 years in classical music, I've met a lot of people, some of them, you know, well-known, some just known in the music world as, you know, some of the great, you know, people. And I'm calling in every favor that I've earned over the last few decades for this project. And I found that if I ask these people I know to play with, I say, do you want to play with our jazz big band? And they say, oh, yeah, please, I want to pay. And I say, well, I can't, you know, afford your usual $10,000 an evening fee or whatever it is. They say, no, I want to do it. I want to do it. I say, well, I am paying you. This is a professional organization. They say, no, I want to do it. So that's my niche. I think that that's, you know, I found something. I said, hey, I better go with that. So over the course of the year, from the jazz world, we have Jim McNeely, who is very well known to everybody. He's good, but he doesn't premiere new works in New York. He goes, he has to go to Europe to do that. So we're going to premiere some of his works in New York. And then we have, from the classical world, we have Lara St. John, who's a very well-known violinist. He plays, you know, the Tchaikovsky Concerto with orchestras all over the world. And she's going to do a Tango Nuevo evening with us.
Wow.
We also have a wonderful world-class conductor named Andrew Litton. He's conducted orchestras all over the world. He was the music director of the Dallas Symphony. He was the music director of the Denver Symphony. Also some orchestras in Europe, and he does an unbelievable Oscar Peterson tribute. He put out a CD, and he's a phenomenal pianist besides being a classical conductor. And we're going to orchestrate his Oscar Peterson solo piano things. So he's going to be our soloist.
Wow.
And yeah, so that is going to be next May 15th, Sunday, May 15th. And then we have some other people from the classical music world, not as well known. The other people that you might know is one of our commissioned people is Rufus Reed. He's going to be writing a piece for us. Everybody knows Rufus. He's one of the great bassists of all time.
Absolutely.
But he wants to be known more as a composer, and he's a really good composer. So I've asked him to do a suite of music where it's going to be the 50th anniversary of A Love Supreme. Actually, by the time we premiere, it's going to be the 51st. So we're going to have four composers. Rufus from jazz. We're going to have this guy, Jeremy Howard Beck, who's an opera composer. Bernie Hoffer, who's a commercial composer. And we're going to get a Brazilian guy or girl. We haven't picked the last composer yet. And it's going to be a four-movement suite of original music after Coltrane. So we're really excited about that. And so that's the kind of thing we're putting on. And it's, you know, you can call it crossover, or you can call it, you know, they used to call it third stream. But it's going to swing like crazy, though. Our players are unbelievable.
Boy, that sounds amazing. You know, I think not as well known as it should be to many jazz fans is so many of our jazz musicians have got complete full training, academic training, conservatory, either specifically conservatory training, or they managed to get conservatory level training. They've got it, you know, and everybody's got to make a career choice, how to make money choice. And, you know, for many of them, jazz was their best shot. They love jazz. They're great at it, but they have many more dimensions to them. And why shouldn't we do something to help them, you know, express that and display that education, that training, that knowledge. So this gets even better. I'll tell you, I didn't even realize you were doing all this too.
For instance, Rufus, you know, he is a classically trained bass player, but he's made an unbelievable career in jazz. You know, I would call Rufus, and I have publicly called him one of the 50 greatest bass players of all time. I'm a bass player, by the way, so I know.
Oh, okay.
But people don't know that he's a classically trained composer, there's often the term, you know, musician composer. Well, it's one thing to write a tune, a bebop tune, and that's a bebop tune, and it's, you know, it's wonderful, but it's not really needy for a composer. A composer wants to write something a little bit more involved, and there's, you know, finding a venue for that is the hard part, and we're going to try to offer one.
Yeah, he wants it played and heard.
Wants their music played above all.
Yeah. And there's that logistic challenge to getting that done. Are there any other events? You mentioned the tango evening?
We're doing a Tango Nuevo evening on March 27th. 2016. As I say, we have Lara St. John. Our program is not yet set, but we're going to do some Tango Nuevo favorites, maybe a little Piazzolla if we can get some rights, and we're working on that. As I say, we want to do everything above board with this organization. I happen to play with a wonderful bandoneonist named J.P. Joffrey. He's been touring the world. He's in the Far East now. I couldn't make this trip. He's going to solo with us, and believe me, it works. If you go to our YouTube channel, you can see us at our summer concert, and it works. with the big band.
That's fantastic to put Tango in that kind of a setting. Hey,
yeah.
Talking about that video, which we will have on the page, same page as the interview, will be right underneath.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about that gig. How did that come together, and what park was that?
That gig where we had a summer concert. This was one of the seminal moments that got me forming this band. As I say, I know a lot of people in the classical music world, and they have organized these kinds of things, and they're well established, and the fundraising established. So a friend of mine is the music director, Lutz Rath. He's a cellist. He's the music director of the Washington Square Music Festival. And they have a summer concert series. It's a free concert series. And he called me up early this year. It was in the middle of winter, maybe in January. He says, I've been talking about my band with him. I said, I want you to do a concert this year. And he said, well, haven't gotten going. How about 2016, summer 2016? He says, okay. And he called me back a week later. He says, no, I want you to do it. I want you to get it together. We're going to pay the band. We're going to pay you. Get it together. And I said, okay. So January, February, we wrote some music. We said, we have to do some big band favorites on that. So we got the Charts. We got A-Train. We got Four Brothers, April in Paris. So, and then we also did some of our original stuff as a preview of our season. And we showed up and we did it on a budget. We rehearsed and we showed up and we had 2,000 people there. It was a beautiful night in June, in July, this past July, and it was awesome. And I was the king of jazz for 2 hours. We had an unbelievable audience, and we got some great video, and the sound quality in the video was great, which is really hard to do. Somehow the videographer was able to tap into the soundboard, because Washington Square Music Festival.
You should definitely use that guy again, because, yeah, he definitely got the sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, yeah, it is remarkable. People send me a lot of videos, and I'll be honest, when I see, an outdoor show that's not, free camera and fully produced,
right.
I'm like, oh my God, here we go again. And when I click play, I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
The band
could play,
and the recording was great.
Well, Four Brothers, I thought, sounded practically like a commercial recording. I was shocked. I was like, wow, this is amazing for a guy with a little video camera. Luckily, he had some kind of a wireless microphone that he was able to patch into the main soundboard. Because we did have a sound system for the house as it was an outdoor concert, et cetera.
Yeah. You've got 17 musicians, but so every story is unique. But is there a pattern?
Yeah.
Where are these guys coming from? What's their usual gig? Where are they starting?
These guys are, I have to back up for a minute. I forgot to tell you about my associate who has been invaluable in helping me put this together, Miho Hazama, who's a wonderful composer herself, and our January 10th concert with Jim McNeely. She's going to be also premiering works. And she just won the BMI prize, Charlie Parker prize this year. So she's been invaluable, and she's younger than me, and she knows the young guys who are coming out of now. There's at least 3 music conservatories that offer jazz degrees in Manhattan alone, Juilliard, Manhattan, and the New School, I think.
Yep.
And when I went to Juilliard, they didn't have a jazz degree, but now they do. So where they come out, these are not right out of school. These are guys that have been out for a few years that have established themselves, that have their own bands. Some of our guys have like a trad jazz band. Other guys have bebop band. A couple of them have been lucky enough to, get on Broadway shows, et cetera, et cetera. Some guys do touring stuff. It's not just the jazz musician. These days, every musician that wants to be a player, it is a struggle, and they have to do anything they can get, and they have to, they have to hustle. They have to hustle getting jobs and playing for other people, and they have to hustle as a leader themselves. So that's where we get our guys.
Gotcha. And so this particular unit must be, kind of dream come true territory. Good pay, great repertoire, big band. It must be.
Well,
it
I
must
hope
be
a- so. I mean, I wish I could offer them, and maybe 5 years from now I'll be able to offer them, a $50,000 a year salary each. But for now it's by the gig, and I hope it's worth their while. I think it is.
Well, you got to start. You have to start somewhere. And, if things nothing. I mean, even the Met probably started out as a small organization and grew over years.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, for instance, like a couple of our guys have Broadway shows, so they're, you know, they're doing pretty good, but they will take off the show to play jazz because it's so much more fulfilling, you know, playing the same Broadway show, you know, night after night for a series of months or years, you know. I don't want to use the word, I don't want to say boring, but maybe it does get a little tedious. So if I have a, if they have a gig that they, and, you know, to take it off one night or a regular night to play for the door is not as good as being able to take it off and I'm paying a comparable salary to what they could make on the Broadway show that night. So they would be more than happy to, you know, hopefully, I hope they have that attitude.
Well, if they're, believe me, if they're doing it, they're doing it because they want to do it, because nobody's holding it to their head and saying, you know, you got to do this.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's, I think what you're doing is great. I, it's something that needs to be done. I like the vision. I like the perspective shift. You know, why not have an organization that's as serious and organized about fundraising for jazz music? I mean, you're right. We do have that with Lincoln Center, but of course, you know, they have the advantage of having Lincoln Center as being their foundation. You know, that kind of helps.
Right.
But be that as it may, I think just to start where you are with what you've got and build it up over time is a tried and true formula. And goodness knows somebody's got to do it. And New York, you know, is just so chock full of spectacular musicians.
Yeah.
To not try to do things like this, you know, it would just be, would be a real shame. I have to tell you, I'm particularly thrilled about the Rufus Reed project. That is really exciting.
Yeah, I am too. I think it's going to be something that is, you know, with these four composers with, from such disparate fields, I think it's actually going to be something, you know, we're going to publish the music. I think it's going to be something that's going to go beyond us and want to, and people are going to want to perform that. That's sweet. I'm really excited about that.
That's great. That really is great. Is there anything we left out that you would like people to know about the group?
Well, I think that they should go to our website, nyjazzharmonic.org. All the information is there. My phone number is on there. Anybody can call me when they want to. I will answer all emails and phone calls. We have all our artist bios for the year of concerts. There's a link to make a donation. And I also want to say that I really appreciate, Ken, that you have sort of seen the gist of what I'm trying to do and, you know, were you know, interested enough to follow up with me on it. I, you know, it's sometimes I feel like I'm talking to the wall when I'm trying to explain what I'm doing, but you definitely, you know, you saw it right away. And I appreciate that.
Well, I'm glad to do it. And I'll tell you a true story. Back in 1994, there was a young fellow named Mark Andreessen that had an idea to put a visual interface on the internet so that it would be easier for people to use. And I knew him back then. And I'm going to tell you, people were not all that interested. And interestingly enough, people in the software industry and people in the then digital media industry, which San Francisco was sort of the center in the world for, it wasn't 100% interest.
Yeah,
I put on an event in the spring, no, actually the fall, of 94, started working on it in the spring, and it was hard to get industry people to say, let's look at this. They all had a reason why it wasn't going to work and why it wasn't worth looking at. So you know, he had the same situation too. He and his partner, Jim Clark, who founded Netscape, they went door to door, you know, to all the media companies and, you know, everybody that you'd think would be interested, and it mixed results, you know, mixed response. So all I can say is, you know, when you've got something good, don't give up on it. And you've got something good. You're doing the right thing the right way.
Yeah.
And
well, I'll keep going as long as I can to keep affording it. So
yeah. No, absolutely. Well, you know, I you know, since we probably have people that are interested in doing similar things, maybe I'll give some unsolicited advice to anybody that's trying to do something like this or working on something like this is definitely invest. I don't mean invest tons of money. I just mean invest some money, any money, in making sure you have a program, even if it's Xeroxed, you know?
Yeah.
It's so important. And do not be shy about, you know, having at least one page, preferably a right side, right facing page, on the right side of the page, where you, you know, you pitch hard and let people know
what
the vision is and why this is important. It's so important. Anything
well,
you
we
can
were,
do.
Well, we were pretty successful with our Indiegogo, which just ended a few days ago. So that was, I was really pleased with that.
Excellent.
With our fundraiser.
I'm glad to hear that. And another related to that piece of advice is, hopefully, I don't know, does Indiegogo give you the email addresses and contact info of your donors?
Say again, I'm sorry, I missed that.
That's okay. Does Indiegogo give you the email addresses?
Oh, yes, they do, and all those people are going to be very well thanked and will be on our future mailing list, and we hope they become part, and we're looking, you know, we want the people who are really interested, we want to put them on our board of directors and, you know, see if we can grow some things.
That's really great, yeah, because I would recommend to everybody, if, you know, we do have this electronic world and it's great,
yeah,
but if you can do physical mailings, especially if you have to, you know, if someone gives a dollar, maybe you can't afford to send them a physical piece, but if someone gives you a substantial amount of money, that's somebody definitely worth cultivating, mailing to, getting to know. So I recommend
cultivation.
Yeah, I recommend that to everybody that's trying to do something like this, because there are people, I mean, I've certainly been at times in my life a donor to things, and acknowledging your donors is a really good idea, and I recommend that.
Yeah, that's a really good word for the nonprofit world is cultivation.
Yeah.
Always looking ahead.
Yeah, because there
are... You never know.
Yeah, go ahead.
You never know who's going to be a jazz fan and who's looking to get involved, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that you referred earlier in the call to that jazz center in San Francisco. That was a guy who, I guess, hit it big in tech, who also was a jazz fan. And I don't know where he got the vision, where somebody talked him into it, or if it was his own idea or a mix of both. But I think he ended up writing a $100 million check to make all that happen. So you never know.
You never know.
And,
well, maybe I'll be lucky and somebody will come to one of my concerts and say, "Hey, that's great. How can I get involved?"
Well,
you know,
exactly. And that's why I say the program is really important. And, you know, break it up into different levels, you know, different donation levels. You know, suggest donation specific amounts. That really helps people. The other thing, too, is, you know, be aware that there are big fish out there and, you know, have sponsoring opportunities. You know, you could sponsor the entire concert or have your name, you know, in the brochure or the program.
This
concert brought to you by, you know, and it could be an individual. It doesn't have to be a corporation. So they want to do it as because they love the music or they love a particular type of music.
Right.
Or they want to memorialize somebody who, you know, meant something to them. So this, it's an art form in and of itself. And the key is that there are many people that really want help. You just have to make it clear.
Well, yeah, something really interesting along those lines. For instance, one of my biggest donors in the Indiegogo, she, who wants to remain anonymous, but she, until the right time, she is going to, we're going to earmark that money to be as the commissioner of our Coltrane suite, which we talked about. And her name is going to be on that music, and that music is going to go around the world, I think. So you know, that's my prediction, at least.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, think about that, if listeners. Imagine having your name associated with a piece of music that's performed for around the world for years and years.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Ron, I love what you're doing. I want to just give you the highest level of encouragement I possibly can to, you know, keep on keeping on. I think you're doing everything right, and I want to encourage. I know we have some generous members of Jazz on the Tube. And, you know, take a look and visit the website and read more about what Ron and his group was up to. And
thank you. I'm going to say it one more time, nyjazzharmonic.org.
Great, nyjazzharmonic.org. Because the bottom line, I mean, we can't have the music without the musicians, and we can't continue to leave the musicians to figure it out for themselves. You know, they're busy enough practicing their craft.
Exactly.
And those of us that have the wherewithal to do things in an organizational way, you know, it's do it, you know, and if you're not, you know, for whatever reason, not in a position to organize, you can help somebody like Ron and New York, nyjazzharmonic.com in their goal.
Right, yeah.
And I think it's a very worthy goal. So, Ron, thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you too. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that you have, you know, your insight and that you, you know, realize what I was doing. And listen, your next fundraiser, I plan on making a donation to Jazz on the Tube.
Well, I would not be sad if you use the money for the harmonic.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the ultimate goal. Just so everybody knows, the ultimate goal of Jazz on the Tube is to remind, you know, let people keep their jazz juices flowing, to give, you know, so that they get out and see live music, buy CDs directly from the musicians when you have an opportunity to, and then when you see a group that's creating a platform for composers and musicians and audiences to hear the music, definitely consider pitching in and helping. So again, that's NYJazzHarmonic.
.org.
Oh, very important.
Yep.
.org. And we'll have the link in the video underneath this this interview.
Yeah, well, Ken, I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. I thank you for what you're doing.
Yeah, it's good timing. If you're not on, what I always say, if you're not on the internet, and the music, way the music business works these days, if you're not on the internet or YouTube or somewhere, you don't exist, fortunately or unfortunately.
It's a double-edged sword, but it does gives us more to do, but it also gives us opportunities to do things that are previously unthinkable.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, you know, getting on a train and going to New York and going to the Museum of Broadcasting, which, you know, this is an old day. Mm-hmm. Old
right,
outing.
Exactly. Just I did the same thing myself.
Oh, you did it too?
Yes, back in the day.
Just to see
whatever
one
something that
video.
You wanted to see, and now it's right at hand wherever you are. It's
yeah,
amazing.
And I think, you know, resources like that are going to make a difference. They're going to help because, you know, it's like everything else. The more opportunity you have to be exposed to the music, certain people who are, you know, have the potential to develop a love for the music. If you feed that love, you're going to have more fans. It's just really that simple. So
that's really good advice. Excellent advice.
Yeah. Well, Ron, thanks again, and hope to see you at one of your concerts.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, great. Goodbye.